Thank you and good morning, and happy Halloween to everyone. It seems that the San Francisco baseball player uniform is really the hot ticket this year. Just hope we can all get out of here this afternoon. So I'm going to do something a little more descriptive and talk about some of the data that we have available in the California Health Interview Survey, or CHIS, and how some of that data has been used, and at the end just talk a little bit about the questions we're asking and whether or not people can actually answer those questions and how they answer the questions. No relationships to disclose. I also just want to also acknowledge my co-author in this work, Matt Jans, who's our survey methodologist at CHIS. So I'm going to talk briefly about the California Health Interview Survey, give you a brief overview, how that survey has been used to help build the evidence base for LGB health disparities, what we ask and how population-based surveys can ask questions about LGB status and how to ask them, and then a little bit more on how folks answer, and then some thoughts about moving forward. So the last two presentations help give you a little background on CHIS. I'll just give you a little more. It's a large survey. We use a geographically stratified random digit dial sample of landline and cellular telephone numbers. It includes 40 to 56,000 households per cycle. We've done this on a biannual schedule, so every other year starting in 2001. Last year we began continuous data collection so that we're constantly in the field with a smaller sample each month, but over a two-year period it meets that same sample size that we've achieved in the past. We do the interviews in about six languages, English, Spanish, two dialects of Chinese, Korean, and Vietnamese, and we've included a sexual identity question since 2001. We added gender of sexual partners in 2003 and gender of spouse or registered domestic partner, the data that Alan just presented, since 2009. An important part of CHIS is this is not just academic research, it's a public health project. We view it very much as a public service. We are committed to what we call the democratization of access to data and health information. So we don't just collect this data to sit on the shelf. We want folks to use it. We want researchers, we want students, we want community-based organizations, et cetera, to access and use the data. So we have different tools to allow people to do that. We have an online query system. I hope, are there any Ask CHIS users in the audience here? All right. Everybody has a website and a query tool. We think ours is really great. We have more than 35,000 registered users on our system. They've made, we're getting close to that million mark. That's over 800,000 queries at this point. Ask CHIS does include sexual identity content. So you can go on there, you can look at a county, you can look at smoking information and get a customized query. It's not canned data that has a SAS engine on the back, and you can in real time customize your query in any way that the data will allow. We also have public use files that are available for free download. Unfortunately, those files do not include the sexual identity behavior or gender spouse RDP, but you can get them. We have something called a special use research file, or a SURF. We're in LA. And that contains the sexual identity and behavior variables, and you can merge it with the public use file. And it's just a small cell confidentiality issue that the IRBs don't let us just hand those out. It's available through an application. We're a soft money center, so we do charge $150 for that. If you're a student, you can get a scholarship. So please don't hesitate to contact us. I think Richard and Alan used a SURF file for the work that was presented earlier. So helping to build the evidence base. Obviously, if there's no data, if we can't identify LGB in health surveys, we can't identify disparities. And we think this combination of including policy-relevant content and providing access to data leads to research and publications. And to date, there have been at least, and I think there's more than this now, 15 peer-reviewed journal articles based on CHIS and some of the follow-back studies on health-related disparities in the LGB community. And these publications clearly help to build the evidence base. They provide pressure for other surveys to include this kind of content, and most importantly, provide the evidence to support policies that will and can address disparities, health and related disparities. So what do we ask? What kind of questions are included in CHIS and how have they changed? Things have changed a lot, I think, in the knowledge base in the past decade. If you look, I mean, just in the culture at large, things in LGB research have changed dramatically in the last 10 years. So in the first cycle, we asked two questions, and we asked them only of adults under the age of 65. We modified them in 2003, and I'll show a little bit about those modifications. We reduced the universe in 2005, even though it was the same question. We reduced them to just those under age 70. And then in 2009, added some of the new questions on same-sex spouses and registered domestic partners. So why change? One, we don't really like change. We like to keep things as stable as possible. We like to keep things stable so we can pool the samples together. We can trend data over time. But when we monitored interviews in 2001, we asked these two questions, and they were really awkward to administer, and they didn't work very well. And we also, there were concerns in 2001 that when we started asking people about their sexual identity, people were going to hang up the phone. We hadn't done it in California. There were a few health surveys that were doing this, asking these kinds of questions. So we looked at the breakoff data in terms of when people were hanging up, and lo and behold, they weren't hanging up on us when we asked these questions. So that gave us some confidence. But the awkwardness of the question made us revisit, and we consulted with Dr. Cochran at the UCLA School of Public Health, and Susan had been working on questions and how to ask these questions for quite some time, and she helped us out tremendously. The other thing she really pushed us on was that sexual identity and sexual behavior are different things, and that if we really wanted to understand this from a public health perspective, we needed to ask both. And so starting in 2003, we asked a different sexual identity question, and this actually follows the sexual behavior questions. And it asked, do you think of yourself as straight or heterosexual, as gay, lesbian, or homosexual, or bisexual? Again, in 2003, we added this question. We initially asked it of all adults. But when we went back to the data and started looking at the data, we had high misclassification of older adults. We had a high rate of them identifying as bisexual that simply wasn't believable. And when you looked at marriage and children and everything else, it wasn't right. They simply didn't understand the question very well. So we've limited that universe to age 70 and under in CHIS cycles since then, although we hope to change that, and I think we have some strategies to try to deal with that. In terms of sexual behavior questions, we've asked 2 to 3 questions. We ask in the past 12 months, how many sexual partners have you had? People often give us kind of a passive refusal and say, I don't know, or I'm not sure. So if they say they don't know or they're not sure, we ask them to give us their best guess. And then after that, if they've had one partner, we say, is that partner male or female? If they've had more than one partner, we ask in the past 12 months, have your sexual partners been male, female, or both male and female? We have a participatory planning process to help guide us in terms of the questions we ask. We have an LGBT work group that met in preparation of the 2007 and 2009 cycles. And in doing so, we added the same-sex marriage questions and the registered domestic partners questions. So you can ask just about anything in a survey that your IRB will allow you. The question is, can and do people give you accurate responses? And so we've been trying to understand our questions a little better, and there's been some really great work done by Kristen Miller and Mike Ryan at the National Center for Health Statistics, and they've done some interesting things looking at non-response to sexual identity questions. And so we have tried to do some of the same work looking at some of the CHIS data, and we have some other populations that they don't cover, which is helpful. In general, most people answer the questions that we asked. Item non-response in CHIS generally is in the 2 to 3% range. The item that people are most likely not to answer is the household income question, which is about 23 to 24%. So sexual identity is much, much less sensitive than asking somebody about their income. And to assess item non-response, we combined don't know responses and where someone says, I don't want to answer that, or they refuse to answer. And this is just some descriptive frequency response, unweighted in CHISP. We looked at this by a bunch of different dimensions, and the one that stood out the most was by language. So item non-response in English was just over 1%, almost six times higher in Spanish, and Cantonese was the highest at about 7.5%. The other Asian languages, somewhere between the Spanish and English item non-response. Miller and Ryan's work with the National Survey for Family Growth, that survey is only conducted in English and Spanish. So the Asian languages was something unique in CHISP. In English and Spanish, there don't seem to be any differences in item non-response by gender. But in the Asian languages, there were enormous differences, up to six times difference for Korean men and women, with about 0.5% of Korean men and about 3% of Korean women refusing or giving us a don't know response. So some very big gender differences. It doesn't seem to be a translation issue. If it was a translation issue, I think we wouldn't see those differences. The Spanish may be a translation issue, but I don't think it is in the Asian language interviews. So overall, item non-response is very low. It differs by language. For Spanish, a lot of the work from NCHS suggests that the issue there is a cognitive one, where there is no clear equivalent of the concept of straight in Spanish. We also, in getting other specify responses to CHIS, most of those other specify responses are in Spanish, and the most common response that we get is normal or normal, because the hetero-homo terms just don't resonate. Again, it's not clear the gender differences in the Asian languages, although my colleague at CHIS, Ninez Ponce, who's a Filipino woman, she looked at our data and said, oh, of course. Asian women never talk about sex. They're good girls. They may have sex, but they don't talk about it. So we're exploring and trying to think about ways that we might be able to do better work in reducing that item non-response. So why should we be concerned about this? Well, we get concerned any time that our error is similar in size to the concept that we're trying to measure. And with about 3% of the population, 3 to 3.5% of the population identifying as LGB, in our error rate about 3%, we have some concerns. Now, if that error were all missing at random, that would be fine, because the non-responders and the responders, it wouldn't affect the overall distribution. But we do have some evidence that it's not random. When we look at who's not responding, it tends to be lower SES, lower education. However, that said, so that's the bad news. The item non-response is not random. However, it does seem patterned in ways that we can control for the data, and we're pretty confident that our estimates in CHIS are fairly accurate estimates of LGB behavior, because we're able to control for those in our imputation processes, where we fill in our best guesses of what those responses would be. The other thing I'm hoping that we can do moving forward is to reduce item non-response. The work out of NCHS did a lot of cognitive interviews, and I think we can potentially change and drop the terms heterosexual and homosexual that tend to generate a lot of confusion. Keep only the terms as straight, and adding the term not gay, which seems to resonate for a lot of folks, especially some of the older population, and that doing so might allow us to expand our sample to the over 70, which I think is really important as we have an aging population and an aging LGB population moving into the future, and that we may have to come up with some different strategies for Spanish. And I think that covers pretty much everything what I just said. So I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much.